And we're live with our 305th episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Really excited to be back. As usual, we're finally tailing in a little bit to the end of Q4. So My life has calmed down maybe a little bit this week. I don't know if it's just a tail end of Q4 or it's more of it's a holiday week, right? So there are people that are not screaming because they are on vacation. Whereas, you know, last week or the week before felt a lot different than that. We did have a successful training last week, harnessing LLMs for application security. Really good. I'm really enjoying the interactions, but also the newness of it every time that we teach it, Ken, right? Like it feels like almost different content, or there's new bits every single time. That's one of the things with the secure code review course is that methodology doesn't necessarily change. We've introduced some of the LLM stuff into secure code review, which is great, but the building blocks for LLMs are just changing so much, you know, month to month, week to week. And a lot of the techniques that we're using to build out AppSec practices using those agents, using those building blocks will change over time. So even, you know, the upcoming Black Hat course, it should be interesting as we integrate, again, more tools, more MCP servers, more strategies, and better prompts, right? Like all of the things into secure code review and harnessing LLMs. It'll be interesting to see how that changes from the course that we taught last week, the virtual course. There are going to be additional opportunities. Say what? Sorry, what you're going to say?
Oh no, I was laughing. I was like, yeah, we got 2 weeks until the next one. We'll probably have to make some updates. Well, not probably. We'll have to make updates. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, we will make updates. I mean, that is the special Black Hat course as well. So that one's going to be intensive, and we're going to spend a lot of time on exercises, right? A lot of it is going to be, that's one of the continuous complaints that we get is we're trying to put too much information into 2 days, right? So we're trying out the 4-day Black Hat course as a precursor to, or to alleviate that discussion that we have. Give people more time to actually exercise those prompts to implement the different techniques. I'm excited to see how that goes. I know like the first couple of days or the first day, especially for both of our courses, you and I talk a lot. We have exercises, but we're trying to share this knowledge that is hard earned and trying to give tips and tricks. And I don't know how much of it's getting picked up. So that we'll see, right? Like I'm just excited to see what the 4-day course looks like.
Yeah, it should be really fun.
Yeah. Outside of that, we are doing the 2-day course again. You know, if you're looking for the value, right, at KernelCon, right? But that's not until April. We will be at Black Hat Asia as well, doing the 4-day course. Yeah. So all of that is coming down the pipe. Q1. That feels a long ways away at this point, but I'm sure it'll sneak up on us pretty quick. Otherwise, it is Thanksgiving, right? Do you have anything in AppSec, Ken, that you are thankful for? I guess, you know, since, you know, it's a holiday theme, we need a turkey somewhere in here, right? That's
Well, I guess I'd be thankful for, oh man, I wish I had, like, I want to have a clever answer for that. I don't have one off the top of my head. I don't know. I'm going to have to, I don't have an answer. Do you have something you're thankful for?
This is how, you know, Q4 goes, right? Like you're asking me at the, you know, the most stressful time of the year, right? I don't know. I was going to, you know, tongue in cheek, you know, shy hello too. I was going to be thankful for, cool names for, you know, supply chain attacks, because I love Dune, right? Like, you know, been a fan for years. I like the old 80s movie that was so campy, but we watched it as kids, and the, you know, the worms and all of that stuff. So the Shai Hulud one just makes me chuckle every single time. So anyway.
I do have one. I'm thankful for our community in AppSec. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thankful for.
Yeah.
I mean, that's but besides that, AppSec's been a pain in my butt. So for decades. Sorry. Did you say something? I didn't pick up what you said.
Yes. No, I just was saying, yeah, like the community is always excellent, right? Like that's, I had real FOMO during Global AppSec DC because the community was there, right? And a lot of good friends, a lot of people that I've worked with for years, and I didn't make the trek back and then, you know, regretted it. But there's always going to be more opportunities as we, you know, as we move forward. I think the other thing I'm thankful for is the continual growth of the industry, right? It still is pretty small, but I do see glimpses of good things happening. I've got a blog post that'll be coming out probably today or tomorrow on the, you know, the updated OWASP top 10 and kind of like my gray beard thoughts on the top 10, and what we've seen. And then some of what we talked about with like last week about vulnerabilities versus risks and how that's evolved, but also like my feelings on how useful it is. Right. And over time it has become more useful. Like, kudos to the team, kudos to the industry, and kudos to, you know, our friends for making that happen. Because it is a lot easier to speak to security in general and application security because of the community that's out there, the tools that have been provided, the resources that are available to us, right? Like, I don't think either of us would have jobs if it wasn't for the way application security has evolved over the years. So,
yeah. I guess that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting, I would say, like, I don't know, it's been an interesting last like few years to watch everything kind of change. And I have some, what, like, I guess as I looked, like, I'm sure you feel something similar maybe, but as we're getting towards the end of the year, you know, I'm sort of kind of getting, I guess, a little trying to think about the future, trying to think about where things go. And it's really, I've been saying this for how many episodes now? Like, it's really hard to predict the state of software development, let alone software security. I mean, I obviously we still have the same old stuff happening. Like, I woke up yesterday to the Shalud 2.0 attack, which I know we're going to talk about. But like, I don't know. I know that we're still going to be dealing with some of the same old things. But I'm all over the place. I know we're going to be dealing with some of the historical problems we've always faced. But I don't know. As I try to think about more and more folks using automated systems to build code, test code, deploy code, as I think about the economics of what falls out of that, I mean, I was having a conversation, and I don't want to say the person's name. They're pretty huge, or they're very well known, we'll say, and very much considered an influencer. And I was emailing back and forth, just sort of had an idea for them, for their, kind of was recommending something I thought that would be good for them. And long story short, to distill the conversation down, it kind of ended with, well, I don't really know that people who are coming into the industry now or entering the job force or the job market now will have the same route to success, if even success will exist, given the ramifications of AI. And I know that's like, I can't tell you everything that happened in the conversation and all the, but that's like the high level. And that was kind of depressing, at, you know, for me. I mean, I was like, wow. do you believe that? This is a pretty smart person, you know? I'm curious, what do you think there? Do you think this is going to, I think honestly, we really also need to have some folks who are newer to the job market,
on to talk to us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be interesting.
I'm confused on everything, man, on everything. Like that would be something I'm curious about is like, what is it like for new people?
Yeah. And I've heard this quite a bit, right? Like, and I know we've had similar takes in the past on the podcast that, you know, I don't know how to train people up anymore to get them the experience that they need, right? To be able to understand how technology fits together, how we find the flaws, how we find those edge cases that make our careers, right? But however, like I don't know if I'm as negative or as nihilistic about that. The more that I utilize AI, the more that I utilize LLMs, and the more that I watch some of the newer employees, the newer engineers that are coming into the field, because their grasp and ability to utilize AI, especially just starting from like ground zero and like the chat instances, the way that they can manipulate that is on par with how you and I made our career actually doing Google searches, right? Being able to manipulate a search engine to get data back out that we wanted. And once that becomes second nature, it automatically translates into your day-to-day tasks. And you've seen this, like this is technology as it moves forward, but older generations that aren't doing Google searches or aren't dealing with LLMs on a daily basis get somewhat left behind, right? Because they don't know how to best utilize that technology. And it's no shade on them because they're not in there practicing it. But I'm thinking of someone very specific that was at SaintCon with us that was helping with the AppSec Village, is new to application security in general, came out of school with a degree, and talking to this individual about prompt engineering and the way that they had come to their own conclusions about how to create prompts when they're dealing with ChatGPT, and not just in general programming, but utilizing ChatGPT for other day-to-day tasks, right? Like, what is the best way to approach, you know, filling a shopping cart, like, you know, something innocuous like that, or like, what are the different techniques for, you know, cooking a steak, you know, like those sorts of day-to-day tasks, and watching how they were able to manipulate LLMs to get back answers that were better than the single prompt things that everyone and their, you know, everyone is doing. It gave me hope and made me realize that that's the route that people are going to take. So instead of struggling, like we used to do, searching for fixes for NPM install or like, you know, whatever latest version of Ubuntu and the libraries or dependencies that were associated with specific IDEs, they're going to use things like Warp. They'll be like very versed in how to actually utilize that technology to get over those hurdles and get at the meat of what they need to do quicker because they know how to use technology. I do question, you know, finding those edge cases, and we've got to be able to train them to do that. But I find it very promising the way they are manipulating those agents. Realistically, that's what it is. It's iPad kids, but now it's generative AI kids, right?
Tag Gen AI iPad kids. Gen AI iPad kids. Get this baby trending. Yeah, no, it definitely makes them more effective.
I mean, do you disagree? I mean, you know.
No, I mean, I was actually, as you were talking about, I was like, well, as these tools are used, what do these tools actually rely upon right now? I mean, maybe this changes at some point. I'm sure this changes at some point, but right now, the most efficient way that, and I actually maybe should just say this out loud, because otherwise it's like, what is he talking about? It's large language models. I mean, that's how AI works. It's like, well, no, not really. It can. But I don't think that the way that LLMs work today are the way they'll work forever. So no. Just flat out saying that, I think this is the first, roughest, best version of something that we will probably throw away and go and perform it in a different way. But anyways, so with that in mind, for the foreseeable future, this is how LLMs are working. They get their knowledge from the internet. And why I'm saying that is, there was a statement that's really stuck with me ever since I had this email exchange, where it was like, how you and I made our careers and were successful is not how these folks will find success. Yeah. And maybe that's true, but I think I could push back a little bit, because you know, it's like the people that you're talking about who can, you know, get up to speed quicker on all this stuff, they are still using an LLM that must have data from experts. Meaning, one of the ways that I made my, or one of the many ways that I tried to help build up my career, was I contributed to like the Ruby on Rails cheat sheets and Ruby on Rails Goat. And you've done VTM and contributed to other open source projects as well. And those things, they're consumed up into these all LLMs, and they become their permanent knowledge. They come from you. They come from your work. Yeah, that's my point. And so, like, I don't know that that actually does go away. Like, maybe that's the thing, is it becomes, you know, I hire experts who know a domain, and they help build the training set for that LLM. I don't know where it goes, but I don't think, what I'm trying to say is, yeah, it may look a little different how your contribution gets consumed and used, but like, we still need contributors. And why couldn't you still also make a career off of going out there, doing the human thing, networking, contributing to projects, being somebody who's helping out the community? Like, that always leads to a good outcome. So I do get a little confused on how AI changes how fundamentally human beings work. That doesn't line up with me. I don't think that that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The pathways might be, they're going to change a little bit, but it's because technology has changed, right? Like, development in general has changed since you and I started, right? Like, as I got into technology and development in general, the idea of even shared libraries for things, for common tasks, was not a given, right? Like, there was a lot of creating your own custom code, especially for web-specific things, right? You wanted to create an app on the web, you were basically creating your own framework, your own templating engine, your own, you know, database layer, and all of that was handcrafted. And the argument always was, like, performance is better when you do something on your own. And we've proven that that's not necessarily the case, especially in a business context. It's time to market. It's not necessarily performance of the computers, because you can always buy more computers. You can't buy time back, right? And so, like, there's been a shift there. And now what do we use? We utilize, you know, frameworks and the latest and greatest, you know, iOS libraries or Android libraries for client-side stuff or web technologies. And all of this is taken for granted, right? And so we're seeing that same shift, but that doesn't mean, to your point, that doesn't mean that people are going to change. We're still going to look for those edge cases, right? Like, the hacker mindset is not going to change. And if it gives us more surface area to actually do that, which indeed it looks like it has, this will be an advantage to those that know how to manipulate the systems and realize how AI plugs into all of these other technologies that already exist. So if I go back to the OS Prop 10, like, security misconfiguration, that risk is going to increase, right? I think it's like I went back and forth on this, right? Like supply chain attacks, security misconfiguration. I think security misconfiguration is number two now in the OWASP top 10. Authorization issues is number one, or access control, or whatever they call it, right? Like, but I think that is actually very forward looking based on the different frameworks, the different technologies that we're using, the fact that everything is code nowadays leads to increased risk for misconfigurations, misunderstandings of how to use AI, of how to use a specific framework, of what the default configurations are, what the default settings are in any of these frameworks. And when you make a mistake, what happens? Your system gets compromised. That was quite a rant that I went on there, Ken.
You're just saying things that are, there's a lot that won't change, that, you know, and when it does change, it's just, it's adding, like you mentioned, added attack surface for things to go after, you know? So yeah, things are changing, but not so drastically that there isn't still sort of the same kind of activities going on that we've always done. I think that shouldn't be lost. It is kind of weird though to watch. It's so funny too, because like we have this, and this is also something that should be addressed. We have a pretty huge split when you think about the day-to-day in our community. There is somebody out there who is currently dealing with a 20-year-old code base. Their company still works in Waterfall. They couldn't even remotely use any new tools. Forget about new techniques. You know, they're that's their life. And then there are people that, you know, are running four separate Claude code tasks on their machine at one time and using all AI native driven systems to secure all the things and have total visibility into everything and are looking at the you know, the latest and greatest, newest stuff that exists. And they get to live in a world like that, right? Where they kind of like me in the first few years at GitHub, where I just had, you know, it's like this, a lot of time to work on things, you know, all the resources at my disposal, all that kind of fun stuff. And there's a huge split. And because of that, there's opinions that are valid all across that spectrum. They're just not valid for everyone across that spectrum, if that makes sense.
You see
some wild predictions like that, where you're like, I hear you. And I don't disagree that eventually some of the things you say are going to come true, but let's stay a little grounded in reality. There are still those COBOL supporters out there.
Well, there has to be, right? Like somebody's got to do that and maintain those systems that are so critical to businesses and infrastructure. I mean, a lot of this is like when you start talking about some of those older technologies, you're not going to find COBOL at a startup anymore, right? Like, and if you do, I want to hear about it, right? Like DM me and let's talk, because I would be fascinated to hear what you're actually doing if you're building something on top of ZOS or whatever it is and why. But
why is the more important part.
Most important part.
Who hurt you?
Who hurt you? Yes. I don't even remember where I was going with that outside of, you're right. Yeah. Like it's those opinions. Oh, okay. So the opinions that you have for your organization and for your, for what you view AppSec to be, you know, definitely changes from role to role, from code base to code base, from support to support. And that's why like predictions become so difficult. Like I know we prognosticate quite a bit and we'll go off on like why we feel like in my space or in your space that AI is great or like what the weaknesses actually are. But with anything, right? Like you got to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. Do you have to take it? Yeah. You have to be practical and grounded in your,
But to that point, right? Like of, you know, old things being new again. And before we get to Shai Hulud, I did want to talk about that open source project identity theft article from Full Story. I'll drop it in here. This is fascinating to me, right? And part of the reason why is something that we saw in NPM, in the Node Package Manager, a couple of years ago, right? Where we saw a sudden influx in new packages being created inside the repository, all for marketing purposes to just test out keywords. Like the names of the package were like, download like NFL videos here, right? Like all sorts of things that were happening. Someone realized that they could go create packages and it would create these resources on the web that they could then link to increase search engine optimization, right? And it was this very drastic, if you looked at the charts of the number of packages in NPM at the time, all of a sudden you went from a steady like 1,000 new packages a day, something like that, to 5,000 to 10,000 new packages a day. It was an order of magnitude greater. And that's what it was. It was these SEO marketers trying to figure out new ways to play, to game the system. And so that's why this fullstory.com article struck a nerve with me, is it's the same sort of techniques and it's the same sort of piggybacking that's going on. You see this quite often if you're running a WordPress blog and you don't turn off comments, right? You'll see, you know, link backs, you'll see links being posted constantly to the blog of people trying to game the system and game search engine ranking. And it looks like that's exactly what happened here, right? Like, so full story, they're talking about their GPC curl project, GRPC curl, whatever that is, and how it's popular on GitHub. And all of a sudden, someone registered a domain related to that. Well, I'm going to pull up the article here really quick. They got an alert that grpccurl.com was created. Somebody stood up a WordPress blog and was basically piggybacking off of their popularity on GitHub, utilizing their name and the .com. And if you went to the site, it actually was just their project page that had been replicated, and then they were linking in different places to play the SEO game. And so they go through this whole discovery process, who it is. Initially, they thought it was some sort of watering hole attack to target their users, but it did not look like that, because even the project itself, like the code that was being hosted on the site, was not malicious and was basically their project and release. And as they dug more and more, that's what came out. It's just a fascinating article to me on, sometimes it's not always as malicious as we think it's going to be. And these sorts of marketing efforts have happened for years, right? Like ever since the advent of Google and Yahoo, people have tried to bump their search rankings because it's all about the money they can earn when people actually interact with their sites, their online stores, and what they can, what they can sell at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I don't know. What were your thoughts on this one? I dug right in. So.
Oh, no. Yeah. Great. Thank you. Actually. So I had posted this and I think it was last week or so about this full story article. You called out all the main things that I would probably call out about this. I did want to bring up the GEO aspect that we were talking about before, because I think like people do need to know that exists, because they may not. And I think that this will actually become important, and I don't know how, but it will. And then maybe it's like this, where you've got this SEO gamification. And I think it was 160, but the other thing too, I think you might've mentioned this, but it's like 165 other orgs impacted by this same group that, abused full stories, domains and whatnot. Okay. So, there's a new thing I learned about from our marketing folks that's called, and maybe you've already heard about this if you're listening, maybe you haven't. Instead of search engine optimization, it's generative AI engine optimization. So I'm myself new to this and trying to learn more, but there are some weird things that people are doing to get their websites picked up by AI when they when a search is performed. Obviously, like the relationship we have with the web is changing. A lot of times, you know, even for this, I mean, podcast, I'll admit there are times where I'm like, before I choose the article that I want to really like dig in on and read all the details on, you know, I got to pare down a list of like 10 or 15 or whatever first. So it's been really nice to just say, all right, TLDR, like TLDR this, TLDR that. But the other thing too is to ask like, which product offering has XYZ, or where can I find out information about whatever, or, you know, and you know as much as well as I do that these days frontier models, they use search, they use agentic search when their training data doesn't have the either isn't trained on whatever the topic is, or if it's like outsourced to, or sorry, if it's like, hey, yeah, give me a TLDR on this blog, it's like, well, okay, well, I don't have that blog in my training set, I got to go out and follow that URL you've given me. Anyways, I'm saying all this to say that there's just a new way that web search is happening. And part of that is that, you know, results come back from these AI systems to gamify that, or to like, yeah, optimize the GEO, as they're calling it. People are doing some wild things where I was told, I don't know this for sure, I was told they'll put like a 16,000 keyword text file onto the website that is set up like specifically to game AI systems into making your website return from those search results. So it's SEO, but now it's GEO. So if you're not familiar with that, I'm sure there's some cool abuse cases. If you're listening, you want to like, I don't know,
yes,
get crazy with it. But that's what your marketing folks are doing now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
It's not surprising, right? Like, but we've always had this issue, this antagonistic relationship between marketing and security, especially on the web, right? The marketing widgets, the JavaScript widgets that were always included on the corporate websites for user tracking, for, you know, click tracking and ads and then optimization, introduced a level of risk to certain sites that we may or may not actually want, right? So the inclusion of additional parameters in there, yeah. I mean, it's something that we've got to look into for sure, because I know my own interactions with web searches nowadays, the AI responses right at the top, are usually good enough for what I'm trying to do. Right? I know I've stopped clicking on links further down. I'm not going to page 3 and 4 anymore looking for a very specific Stack Overflow article to answer my question. It's usually good enough, the AI description, as long as my search is good, right? And that goes back to that whole like ability to actually use search and utilize generative AI in an appropriate manner. But that's how I interact. And so I'm all on board if people can write something that is useful to generative AI and to me, and actually, and actually limits the amount of like SEO that we have to do. I've always found that game to be a little counterintuitive from a technology perspective, because we often don't actually trust search results because of search engine optimization. Right? Yeah. When was the last time you clicked on a sponsored link?
Accidentally, I've done it several times, but just accidentally. But
no, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. If I know it's sponsored, I will never click on it. It is kind of funny though, like, actually, on this note, I'm just gonna say something that's really, I think it was like, you know what? I won't say it. I will, but I won't say the names. There's a SaaS company that if you Google them, a competing SaaS company that comes up and says like, Are you tired of that we'll say a companies? If you search for a company, B company says, are you tired of a companies like this, that, and the other problems? Well, come check out our website and it's sponsored. So I don't know. I won't throw shade too hard a shade on who's doing that. I thought it was absolutely hilarious in terms of, you know, techniques. But yeah, geo is just something I didn't even know was a thing. And, you know, it makes sense. I mean, I suspected it was a thing, but until you hear somebody put a name on it and a label and say, here's ways people are doing that, it's kind of not real. It's real now.
Yeah. Yeah. The marketers actually are usually pretty innovative and pretty ahead of the curve, the good firms, in getting their clients' content in front of the masses, right? That's the whole game. And so it's hard to complain when the technology that we've come up with on the engineering side is being utilized and they're finding the weaknesses in it that allow for that promotion. Because it's all an attention game, right? Business in general is attention. It was funny. I was talking to Rob Fuller, to Mubix, right? About Black Hat courses specifically. And they actually played this game with the course listing and realized they had like a 10 to 20% increase in attendance in their courses when they utilized it like advanced first instead of like network, right? Because they were first in the list or one of the first courses that people looked at in the alphabetized list that was on blackhat.com as people were picking out what training they wanted to go to. And I was like, that's fascinating, right? Like people click on the first link, being on that first page has a material influence on what you actually do and what you interact with. Like we should know this, like social media algorithms are built around this fact. The more popular a post is, the more rating that it has, the more likely it is to show up in your feed. The more it induces fear or love, right, or disgust, the more likely it is that people are going to interact with it. And so that's the game the algorithm plays, is what are those items that you are most interested in? I'm going to put that in front of you. So generative AI engine optimization is the same thing. Part of me thinks that we should lean in as application security people and realize that that's the game that's being played. As much as I want to think that the risks are going to be valued appropriately or weighted appropriately, attention is paid to those first couple of items. OWASP Top 10 definitely plays this game, right? Like being able to create a succinct list. But even in that list, guess what? Items 8, 9, and 10 are not going to get as much attention as 1, 2, and 3. Now, it's appropriate in the way that we've weighted things, and we are playing that game with the list because those are the most important risks. I just feel like we should be understanding of the fact that people are the consumers of what we produce. And so we've got to create content, we've got to create reports, we've got to create apps with that in mind instead of with the technologist brain, which wants to show everything and every little nuance. And I'm going back and forth arguing with myself about UI design now, just based on generative AI engine optimization. So yeah, thanks for that, Ken.
I mean, that is the thing though, like it is kind of a weird, you're larger now, but when you're a smaller consultancy, especially, it's like all of your, or like, I'm only saying this because like I've played this game before. I'm not saying this was your specific case. I just know how this goes. When you're first starting out, especially in services, really in services related stuff, like people come to you because of grassroots networking and things like that. They're not coming to you because of your website. There is a certain threshold, however, which you reach, and then that website becomes really, really important. For me on the product side, Like, that's the game, honestly, as a lot of it is. Because everybody thinks it's like, well, if you create this killer product, you know, you'll just take off. Hey, I fucking did that. And I'm still waiting to take off, right? So we're doing well. We're getting customers and whatnot. But it's not like you get some, like, rocket ship moment. You have to do other things well, too. You have to, you know, execute on the other business aspects well, is all I'm saying. You can build the best engine, the best SaaS. Believe me, ask me how I know. You build the best SaaS engine, build all these bells and whistles, all these crazy things people never had before. You still have to market it. You still have to have a really good website that people like. One of our things that someone had brought up after the Joshua, and I'm going to forget his last name here. Sorry, Joshua. Joshua. So I don't know. Anyways, Joshua had made a blog post. We were mentioned in it, and he was saying, like, he's talking about the SEO. And really, like, when you look at it, pretty much the smaller players, including us, all kind of struggled there. And who wins that? It's the sneaks, it's the SEMgraps, the people who say, like you mentioned, sponsored links. I'm only saying this because I wonder if in like a GEO world where people are using more of the results of AI, if it doesn't actually help the smaller startups as they understand that world a little bit better, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm just pondering that we could all get ahead of that and optimize better there. I don't know. SEO is always a weird world. It's been used so much over the, I mean, there's been a whole history that probably if you have started security in the after the 10 years ago, you probably never even came across all of the crazy things that we've seen historically with SEO related hijinks. But I don't think there's been a lot of hijinks since the last 10 years. Am I wrong on that, Seth?
Nothing that's been in the news, but it does feel like marketing firms and other advertising agencies have learned to play the game. And I know they're continually tweaking their algorithms to maintain position or increase position based on what it is. Like the amount of spam that I get as a business owner related to SEO optimization is actually pretty incredible. I mean, I've been around for long enough now that, you know, our name's out there a little bit and we still have our clients and, you know, my name specifically is out there. And so email is pretty easy to guess, but it's nonstop. There's always somebody that wants to go and improve my SEO rankings and are willing to take my money to provide the latest and greatest algorithm to make sure that I show up, you know, on the top of the list or close to it for any of these. Part of me wants to take the bait on some of that just to actually see the techniques that are being used, because those are software edge cases that, you know, they're very specific to the search engines, but they are software edge cases that aren't always planned by Google, by Microsoft, by Bing, by any of the search engines in general. And the marketers have found flaws and payloads that they can use to actually increase rankings, even though it may not necessarily be appropriate. Yeah, it's a fascinating industry because it feels like it is a little bit of subversion that's going on. It's not necessarily, it's not merit-based, right? It's money-based and exploitation-based, and we treat it as if it's a completely valid industry and completely above the board when it really is taking advantage of weaknesses in search engines and now generative AI systems in order to increase your profile and basically gain more money at the end of the day. Fascinating. Yeah, like I'm going all over the place, but it is fascinating.
That sounds like a lot of businesses. That's all I'm laughing about.
Yeah. Yeah, but they are. Like you look at it at the core and it's an industry built around the exploitation of a technology process. Like search engines go out, search the web, and then they serve results. The truest form of that was, you know, Google and Yahoo back in the day as they were competing, and they were both pretty large search engines. But before they got into this ranking idea, where they would actually look at the content of a site, what people were using. Then you get, that's where you get the whole page ranking system from Google that was so innovative, because it created more relevant search results. And then marketers started to exploit it, right? They found the weaknesses in those search crawlers. And that's what the whole industry is built on, is exploitation of search crawlers. An extension of that. Now we've got exploitation of generative AI crawlers. Great, right? Like, it'll be fascinating to see where it goes.
Yeah, I want to post in, I'm trying to Google, hold on. Give me one second. I'm trying to find this link. Yes. So those of you who remember our friend Johnny Long.
Yes.
Just hearkening back to this from I don't know why I'm going old school today, but screw it, I am. There's a book called Google Hacking for Penetration Testers, made by Johnny Long. Johnny, he was very popular because of his work back in, I would say, like, peak would be maybe like 2010, 2011, maybe. I think that was the peak. I mean, you know, earlier than that too, like 2007, 2008. I remember he was speaking at Black Hat DC, I believe, back in 08 or something like that. Anyways, if you're curious about Johnny, he went on to do a bunch of charity work, moved overseas. You can read his story. But that was the first time where the search optimization was abused by hackers to find juicy. And man, back then you could find, it was like Google basically was Shodan for web security flaws, you know?
Yeah.
Just, you're basically searching for, I mean, I remember doing a lot of, especially back when Oracle was even worse. And the book that's behind me actually, somewhere, Oracle Hacking Handbook. Oracle Hacking Handbook was really, was that Arsenic who wrote that, or am I?
Oracle Hacking?
Man, yeah.
I don't even remember.
It was Dave. No, I'm sorry. It was David Litchfield. So David Litchfield.
Yep. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. So David Litchfield wrote this book, Oracle Hacking. And it had a crap ton of really awesome SQL statements, essentially, that you could just literally copy and paste into a vulnerable server, and you own that database. And when you tie the two together, basically Google at that time, with those two books being released side by side, you had this way to find those websites that were vulnerable very, very easily. And then you had a way to exploit them virtually immediately, also available. And I think maybe at some point, if we didn't do it with WXF, I think Metasploit built a module or modules around attacking these Oracle apps, so you could get like remote code execution, reverse shell, and all that fun stuff. It was a time. It was amazing. It was quite a good time.
It was the Wild West on the web, right? Johnny Long, like, looking at it, right? Like, I think his first presentation on Google hacking, right, was 2004.
Like, yeah.
So it was around the same time of RFP and vulnerability disclosure stuff that was going on. But yeah, like, it was prevalent for so long. I mean, we're talking, you'd find spreadsheets of social security numbers of students, like, hosted and indexed by Google, hosted at universities, right? Like, all because that was their student ID, right? Like, all of this kind of stuff was you know, incredibly easy to find. Anyway, so search engine exploitation, we're seeing that nowadays. We're seeing, you know, generative AI exploitation by marketing in order to show up in rankings. So yeah, fascinating. Yeah. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left. I know you've got a hard stop, but let's talk about Shai-Hulud too, before, you know, based on your background today. I'm not as up on Shai-Hulud too. I've just been down in the weeds doing, you know, Q4 work. So, you know, tell me what it's about, how it differs, and, you know, what people should be aware of there.
Yeah. So researchers at believe Aikido, they detected, they've set up detections, and they saw the same activity occurring again. This one was a little bit different. I never know, by the way, whenever I dig into these articles, they never really talk too much about the initial exploitation. And I suspect they don't know how the first plant, the egg is getting, or the first seed is getting dropped. Anyways, in this latest incantation, they've learned from some of their mistakes. So it's a little worse. Like they made mistakes in the last campaign, and they made new mistakes in this campaign, but they had fixed some of the mistakes in the last campaign, so it was even more effective. And I think there was the worm
Okay.
propagated to, like, I don't know, maybe hundreds of NPM instead of like 41 packages. It's literally like hundreds. I think 400 or 500 packages were compromised last I looked. 25,000 tokens is like quote I saw recently in terms of tokens that were valid being posted to GitHub. But what's interesting is this time they had two files. So there is a bun BUN install, and they have an install script that goes with it. But that install script, it's got instructions to download another script. And so that second script that executes, it doesn't execute right away. So when you run the install script, it's not like, okay, now I've got this other thing running, and it's like kind of, maybe even if you don't see the output, maybe your machine, you start to notice more usage. If you're watching your activity monitor or something, I don't know. But to get all around, like to get around suspicions, they wait a few seconds before they kick off the second file, the actual file that's got the vulnerable code inside of it. It's highly obfuscated. I believe I had read it was about 10 megabits long, if I'm not mistaken, in
Yeah.
obfuscated code. So again, you have the real installer, which does the real installation, and it's like totally fine. And then you have the secondary script, which after the install occurs, there's some period of time it waits and sleeps. Then it kicks off this secondary malicious code. And then that malicious code is also, when it's kicked off, put into a background process. So basically, in the background, you're getting this crap happening to you, where it's exfiltrating your machine. So the fix that when I forget one of the companies, so, whenever one of the, whenever something like this happens, the other companies will try to kind of, especially if this is your domain, like vulnerable libraries and stuff, they'll try to, like, kind of do their own blog posts, is what I'm trying to say. My God, I can't speak. They're trying to do their own research. So one of them had a product. I don't know if it's like a paid for product or whatever. I thought it was a neat idea though. Basically, it's two days of embargo on those libraries. So you can just say, okay, for the, if you're going to install a library, you have a block for 2 days until that library can be updated or installed. And I'm like, hey, that's actually pretty smart, right? Like that's putting in a window where, because what ends up happening is when these packages are compromised, they're obviously yanked, but there's like usually, from what I've witnessed, a 3 to 4 hour window before that happens. And I could be totally off, and it could be even longer. So even
Yeah.
better to wait 48 hours before you update or install. So I did think that was cool. But it's virtually, it's a lot of the same kind of stuff as last time. It's just some new funky ways to obfuscate the malicious code collecting credentials. That's all. Well, I do have to start wrapping up, and I apologize. I do have to get going here. Got a meeting
That's
starting
okay.
now, so.
Yeah, I was just gonna, all I was gonna say on that one was, go check out that Helix Guard. Like that's, that was some sort of open source research, but the list of packages there is, whew, man, yeah, it's quite a number. And protect yourself, like be, stay secure, make sure that you've got some process in place to deal with this. If you didn't the first time around, this is just indication that it's going to continue.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, everybody have a great holiday. Hit us up on Slack if you have some other research or something else that you want to talk about. We will be having a few more guests towards the end of this year and then into next year as well. And yeah, glad you're a part of the community. Thanks for listening. Otherwise, we will see you all next week.
Thank you.
All
Thank you,
right.
everybody, for listening. All right.
Thanks all. Ciao.